This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher as we welcome you in. Tremendous job, Tim Murray. Of course, Adam Burke. Week one college football preview prior to Sharp Money hitting the airwaves here on VSIN. We should discuss as we open the show. I'm sure the boys discuss it. This is for you, Amal Shaw. Ryan Day, after a lengthy quarterback battle this offseason, has announced Kyle McCord as the starting quarterback for the first game of the season against Indiana. Taking a look at the number quickly, and then we'll go through the machinations. Right now, Ohio State, Indiana, the number over at DraftKings is 30. So Ohio State laying 30 on the road, a big number. McCord has been in the battle, of course, Amal, with Devin Brown as the team looking to replace CJ Stroud, number two selection in the NFL draft. It looks like Devin Brown is going to get some time as well. We will be joined coming up later in the show by Kevin Noon, who's on the beat there for the Buckeyes, but we start with a former Buckeye and discuss Kyle McCord, Amal Shaw, as your starter for Ohio State.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. He's got one start in his career so far. Last year threw for over 500 yards in a backup role to CJ Stroud, which you alluded to. To me, Patrick, I don't have a ton of confidence right now in the quarterback position for the Buckeyes, but the bigger question mark that I don't think enough people are talking about is the offensive line. You replaced three players that were drafted off that offensive line, including Paris Johnson, a first rounder who goes to the Arizona Cardinals, and then two guys to the Browns and DeJuan Jones and Luke Whipler. So you lose two tackles and a center. The talent everywhere else defensively, offensively is very, very good, but you've got to replace those three key positions on the offensive line and then quarterback. And the only team I've ever seen that has had success playing two quarterbacks was Florida. And Spurrier did it with immense amount of confidence when he did it in the 90s. But other than that, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Both guys are going to have a great opportunity here in game one.
Now, it's funny you say that, because as Dustin and I were talking earlier today, the announcement was made for McCord over Brown there at Ohio State. Now, Brown's going to see the field. Ryan Day said, I think that's significant that we have two guys that can feel confident playing the game. So McCord deserves to be the starter, but Brown's play throughout the offseason will give him the opportunity to see the field as well. We went through and looked up historically, you mentioned Florida, some of those programs and coaches that have gone with a two, potentially three quarterback system throughout a season. Of course, a lot of this is a very compromising dance that coaches have to play with the recruiting trail, and then comes reality with playing time, which we'll go through in just a bit. Before we get to Dustin on this, did you have a preference, McCord or Brown?
No, you know, haven't seen Brown play in live action, and he's got much better mobility than McCord does. But I thought you brought up a great point there that can't be overlooked in this. And I think this is going to happen more and more as we get towards close races for quarterbacks in most teams in the future. I don't know if this decision is completely accurate from Ryan Day, or it's a decision to kind of deter one of the players from entering the portal. Brown now in his second year, McCord in his third year at Ohio State. So both of these guys have sat a year to 2 years behind CJ Stroud. And if one of those guys was going to be dubbed the number two, I think you would have seen somebody jump into the portal pretty quickly. And sometimes I feel like teams make these decisions intentionally, and the Buckeyes have a little bit of time to ramp up. They've got Indiana, Youngstown State, and Western Kentucky before they play in South Bend to really make a concrete decision.
Yeah, so DraftKings opened the number. Dustin, we'll get your take on the quarterback situation there, Ohio State. And then I'll lay out kind of an example. Kevin Sumlin in Texas A&M, maybe akin to what's happening right now with Ohio State and Ryan Day. 28 was the opener at DraftKings with Ohio State laying it. It's up to 30. Big guy take on Ohio State in the quarterback position.
Well, I think the big thing is Kyle McCord is Marvin Harrison Jr.'s best friend, and that plays a major role in this. I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve it. I'm not calling it nepotism. I'm just saying that has to factor in some ways that Marvin Harrison Jr., your best player on offense, trusts Kyle McCord. I have no idea which one of these quarterbacks is better. I think this is a brilliant play by Ryan Day, because Ryan Day has benefited in the past from another program deciding to go with a different quarterback, one that they thought had the pedigree to bring them a national championship, and that's Georgia and Jake Fromm. Because Georgia chose Jake Fromm, Justin Fields ended up going to Ohio State and playing for the Buckeyes. If that doesn't happen, Justin Fields has a chance to win a title for Georgia and might have been the piece that put them over the top. So Ryan Day is really smart. He does not want to lose one of these guys, because there's a lot on the line this year, because outside of that position, everything else is in place to be a title contender.
Is that the case, Amal? You mentioned the offensive line. Outside of the quarterback position, McCord and Brown, is everything in place for Ohio State to win a championship this year?
Absolutely. There was talk about trying to get enough NIL money to get C.J. Stroud to return. And I always say, listen, if you're a quarterback, you can't return because you're losing 1 year in towards free agency, which could be worth $40 or $50 million. So the NIL money will never be enough in reality. But absolutely, Patrick, that's a great point Dustin made. If Stroud were to have come back this year, Ohio State would have been preseason number one. They would have been loaded. If you look back last year, their defense wasn't as poor as people think they were. They gave up a few big plays in the Michigan game and, of course, the Georgia game as well. There's a ton of talent there. The recruiting class that they had a few years ago that are juniors now, this team is loaded. They've got potentially anywhere between, if you go by ESPN's projection, which I think they just put Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia guys in the first round so they don't have to do any work, but they've got seven guys projected for the Buckeyes in the first round. That won't happen. But at the end of the day, they're probably going to wind up with seven to eight guys drafted in the first 90 picks.
Do you fellas remember who we had Joshua? His last name slip in my
Perry.
Mind right now.
Perry. Yep.
Exactly. We had Joshua who played at the program, I think 15 through 18, somewhere in there. And we asked him about the two quarterbacks. You two remember who he said, because he's obviously close to the program as well.
He thought McCord would probably get the edge simply because when you look at it, Dustin alluded to it, he's high school teammates at St. Joseph's in Philadelphia with Marvin Harrison Jr. But to me, Devin Brown's mobility, if the offensive line is not effective, can be extremely beneficial. They've got two talented running backs in Travion Henderson and Mayan Williams. This team has got a ton of talent. You know, we talk about Marvin Harrison, but guys, we don't even talk about a guy, in my opinion, that should have been at the University of Washington in Emeka Egbuka. Think about Washington's receiving core if they had Egbuka with a Dunzie and McMillan already up there. He's the number two rated receiver in the NFL draft, and we're talking about him like he's just some also-ran. This team, as Justin alluded to, Patrick, a ton of talent. If the quarterback play can be 75% of what it was with Stroud, this team's got a legitimate shot to win the national title.
Well, boys, as we again welcome you in here, Sharp Money, starting quarterback has been named at Ohio State. McCord is going to start. Devin Brown will play against Indiana, so they're going to go. And again, that's compromise. And I want to discuss this and use Kevin Sumlin and Texas A&M as an example. Just give me a second here. Again, whether compromise or splitting the difference, it's never a good idea, not just in work, but in life. However, Kevin Sumlin, let's talk about him at Texas A&M. His demise was not recruiting related, as you know, Amal Shaw. He's a great recruiter, but there's a dangerous game that these coaches, and I think Day is entering this territory, a dangerous game that these coaches play along the recruiting trail where promises are made and then reality come the fall actually has to play out. Do you guys remember the name Kenny Hill? Kenny the Thrill Hill? Remember him? Texas A&M. 13-14 was the starter. In comes in 2014, five-star Kyle Allen, a true freshman. Midway through that 14 season, he unseeds Kenny Hill as the starter at Texas A&M. He looks like the future, plays very well. 2015, Kevin Sumlin in Texas A&M recruiting class. In comes the best dual threat guy in the country, and that is Kyler Murray, five-star. 2015 season, expectations off the charts for Texas A&M and Kevin Sumlin. He pulls Allen after seven games. He inserts Kyler Murray for three games. He pulls Murray, inserts Allen for the final two games. What's he trying to do there? Split the difference. Make both guys happy. What happens? As soon as the season ends, within a week of one another, they both transfer away from the program. They were both promised something along the recruiting trail, and then the reality was they were pissed off that they were splitting time with the guy, both Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray, that they thought they were better than. So what happened next year? They go to Oklahoma, grab Trevor Knight, who's not necessarily familiar with the program. Obviously, they go 8-5. Just no continuity. I'm using that as an example. And maybe you guys can correct me if you don't think it's an apt example, but that's the game that these coaches are playing where it can spiral very quickly.
First of all, I love the example you just cited there. Kenny Hill was the son of the former big league pitcher, Ken Hill, who pitched for the Rangers and other teams. He's from the Dallas area, played at South Lake here. I remember this very vividly because I was still in Dallas at the time. Kyler Murray is arguably the greatest high school football player in the state of Texas. He was 41-0 as a starter, won three state titles in the biggest division in Texas. So It was a really tough situation there for Kevin Sumlin because you've got an all-timer in Kyler Murray coming in. And to balance that and don't lose guys, I think the situation in Ohio State's a little bit different. It's a little bit easier because I don't think either guy has truly separated themselves. I think they're both solid and serviceable with the talent around them. But when you look at Murray and what he brought to the table, and Kyle Allen was a big-time recruit as well. He just was never as good at the collegiate level. But Murray was a guy that everybody wanted Sumlin to put on the field, and he just may not have been ready. And then we saw the explosion he had in Norman. I think that's probably the most apt example you can find out there in the last decade.
Amal, I would just love, and Dustin, when we come back, Dustin's got examples of these kind of multi-set quarterback situations going into a season and how they played out. There's more. I didn't realize there were so many. We'll kind of go through some of the pitfalls and some of the triumphs. However, I think this is why coaching in college is such a pain in the ass, what we just explained. Like, if we had Ryan Day on Sharp Money right now, it was like, okay, McCord or Brown, he'd have an answer, snap of the finger.
Yes.
He'd tell you, this is my guy, and I'll tell you why. I don't even like the other guy. Or I like the other guy, but here's exactly why I'm comfortable with McCord, and I'm not going to put words in his mouth. Here's why I'm comfortable with Brown. I can guarantee you, Amal, Day would have an answer.
But
the answer is he has to split the difference, because he has to make people happy.
I love what you said there. And based on what you said, I tend to agree with you. I think it's probably Brown that's the guy, but you need the experience of McCord behind him, because if he doesn't deliver or he doesn't play as well as you think or gets injured, now all of a sudden you've got to go to some guys behind you that you don't necessarily love the situation. They've got a true freshman, and then they've got a senior transfer in Tristan Gebbia. I think, is he from Oregon State? I'm trying to think who's the guy that they have backing him up. But the point is, Patrick, you bring up an excellent point. They would know immediately who the guy is.
Confirmed. Here's the thing. The transfer portal used to be like, you know, booking an airline ticket. Now it's just calling an Uber. So if he pisses off one of these quarterbacks, they Uber the hell out of campus. When we come back, we'll discuss.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, the updated NFL betting guide comes out this Thursday. Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSIN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide will have picks from every on-air host. I actually saw the host picks, and there's just a myriad of differences. So I think you'll like it, whether it be season totals, props, it's all in there. Team specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits and football contest strategies. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, it's $19 for the first month, or you can save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. Okay, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. Kyle McCord replaces, I guess you could say it that way, CJ Stroud as QB1 for Ohio State. However, Ryan Day did split the difference and did compromise and said Devin Brown is going to see some playing time against Indiana. We're going off the premise this isn't a good idea. Now, and we were having some debate, and remember, Ohio State opens at Indiana on Saturday. They're laying wood. They're laying 30 off the opener of 28, so it's crazy. But we were actually having a fun debate or conversation during the break about, has this worked in the past where a coach splits snaps throughout a full season? Remember last year, I believe it was Amal, J.J. and Cade go to Michigan, and Harbaugh's like, we're going to let this play out. Almost like a competition heading into a week beginning part of the schedule. But let's go a little bit deeper, boys. Can this work? Let's just say the placation continues and Day wants to split the difference and continue with the two quarterback system. Can we think of it working in the history of college football, or at least our time? Dustin, I know you've done some research, so let's throw out some examples.
So let's go with a few here. Clemson, Kelly Bryant left after Trevor Lawrence. I think it directly relates to this situation. One of these guys is a bigger recruit than the other, right?
They're about the same.
Okay. Okay.
The Bryant situation, I wouldn't compare, because Kelly Bryant kind of saw the writing on the wall. You've got a generational player in Trevor Lawrence. Lawrence, coming out of high school, him and Fields were the top two quarterbacks, and he was projected, if he doesn't get injured, and he's even sure, what we think, he's going to be the first pick in the draft.
Okay. Next one here, Virginia Tech, with limited success, but no national title or anything. They went with Sean Glennon and Tyrod Taylor at the same time. Success?
I don't remember. I'm trying to remember if they played, how that played out throughout the whole entire season. Do you remember them all?
I don't. I remember Tyrod was effective. Now, that might have been the second year,
yeah.
And I can't recall. Let's be real here, guys. We've all forgotten about Virginia Tech in the last half a dozen years.
I think the best example would be Florida. Let's go to the big ones. Let's go to Florida and remember Chris Leak. I mean, Dustin, you were probably living in that part of the country at that time. Chris Leak was one of the biggest recruits coming out of North Carolina in the history of college football. Like, Florida landing Chris Leak was a big deal. He didn't end up being the player. He's a good player, very good player. Didn't end up being the player that was suspected, but let's go ahead and dive into that Florida situation.
Well, four-year starter, too. So they bring in Tim Tebow. Chris Leak, there's no doubt in anyone's mind, he is QB1 going into that season. And I think what makes that situation a little bit more unique than a lot of the others where we see quarterbacks splitting time is the number two quarterback wasn't brought in to throw passes. He wasn't going drive for drive, you go, I go, you go, I go. It was, we need to move the chains or we're in the red zone. Tim Tebow comes in and plays fullback with a throwing arm. That's essentially what he did, and I think that's why it worked. I think it also helped Tim Tebow, not as a development as a quarterback in the NFL, but a quarterback in college football in getting that limited experience so that the transition the next year worked out. In this case, you can't really compare McCord and Brown to that because I can't imagine they would do something similar.
I was just going to say real quick on the Tebow one. He threw 33 pass attempts that freshman year. Five touchdowns, one INT, but you guys are right. Patrick brought it up. Chris Leak, I think coming out of high school, out of Charlotte Independence, had the career yardage record at that time. So he was the guy you were going to go with, and I think that's probably the best example. Remember the Gators in the 90s did it with Doug Johnson, and I forgot, it might have been Noah Brindis or Jesse Palmer at the time, but it just hasn't, guys, it's the old line in the NFL. If you don't have one starting quarterback, if you have two quarterbacks,
that's right.
You have none.
And I think maybe I set this up incorrectly because what I'm talking about here is a coach trying to thread the needle. And what Urban Meyer did with Leak, an all-time recruit, and then also placating Tebow without pissing off Leak by using him in those run packages, those jumbo packages, Dustin and Amal. That's kind of what I'm talking about, where he kind of kept the equanimity the same throughout. Like, for example, Cade McNamara, J.J. McCarthy, as soon as the season ended, where'd Cade McNamara go? Iowa. Right. So I guess what I'm saying is trying to keep the peace while also playing this game, which I think Ryan Day is headed into. And I think it can be dangerous. Does that make more sense? Because that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, because it's also really rare to make both happy if one's not playing. And we saw that with Alabama, right? With Jalen Hurts to Tua, then to Jalen Hurts for the SEC title game when Tua got hurt. Like, it's very rare that the quarterback's going to stay and be available there in that situation. That's the only time it's ever really worked out where the other guy stays and he's needed because of an injury to come step up for the other guy. Outside of that, these guys are bolting. They're leaving, or success just isn't there. Like Jarrett Lee and Jordan Jefferson, LSU, didn't work. Tried playing both of them.
Jordan Jefferson wasn't an effective enough passer, but overall, when you look at this right now, I think Kyle McCord's got a missed opportunity here. You've got a high school teammate who's the best receiver in college football. I mean, this guy is already, he'd be a wide receiver one in the NFL for about 20 teams. I mean, he's that good of a receiver. And to me, for him not to be able to kind of separate himself from Devin Brown, unless Brown is that great, it remains to be seen. But I thought Patrick hit the nail on the head when he said, right now, you know, it remains to be seen, and kind of Ryan Day's trying to thread the needle. It's a tough situation. And unfortunately, if you're a goalie in hockey or if you're a quarterback in football, you end up having to transfer because you just can't play if there's somebody in front of you. That's just the nature of the game.
Well, I have a question for both of you. If he is willing to not declare, like, this is the guy for the season, this is who we're riding with, and he's going to go back and forth in some respects, we don't know what the split would be. Can you win a national championship without having that definitive as this is my quarterback one?
Normally I would say no, but when you look at the talent on the rest of this roster, it's so absurd that they have a chance to. And also, look, guys, we're going to get into some of the plays later on, but I think there's only three teams competing for a national title this year. I know people don't want to hear it, but I think there's only three teams that realistically can win it all this year.
You can lay it out. I think that's a good time to lay it out. You know, this has got me thinking. Remember the Ohio State team that was so freaking loaded?
15.
And they had the quarterback from Michigan. Gosh, his name is slipping my mind. Just a basic quarterback that did enough.
Craig Krenzel?
Oh, What's it?
Krenzel.
Krenzel?
Yeah.
Exactly right.
The 0-2 team, yeah.
Do they have a Krenzel here with McCord? Because here's the overarching idea of this was, I hope Day's right because he's going to lose Brown. You see my point?
Yeah.
If McCord is your guy, I hope he was the right call because Brown's going with McNamara to Iowa. I'll just use that as an example.
Or conspiracy theory. What if McCord is offended that they're keeping Brown in and Brown cuts into his playing time? And at some point he just, you know, there's a game where Brown's more effective and McCord's like, I'm done with this. This is nonsense. I don't look good because I'm not getting playing time. And this could do McCord in too.
Yeah. You guys nailed it. Craig Krenzel. I mean, could you have found a more basic college quarterback that just did the right thing, didn't make mistakes? He's from Sterling Heights, Michigan. I knew it. That's where I grew up. He was a game manager that had talent. You remember those, what, 0-2 teams? He had talent just out of his eyeballs around him.
They had 14 players drafted the next year. I mean, they beat Miami. Their team was elite defensively.
They didn't really beat Miami.
Well, yeah, you're right. We should have never gone to overtime because Gamble was inbounds on that third down and 10. If you want to see the tape, I can pull it up for you. But
that's when my man busted his ACL when he shouldn't have been playing, correct? The running back.
Willis McGahee. Oh, it was more than an ACL. It was the Will Allen hit.
Yeah.
He tore up everything.
Yeah, that was a...
McGahee tore everything. That was a great game. But that's my example. Yeah. Like, I'll use Krenzel to then parlay it to this year's Ohio State team. Give us the three and we'll come back and discuss. So the three teams... And
Georgia.
I'm curious if you're in. Okay, Georgia obviously is one.
Michigan, two. And Ohio State, three. Look, real quick on Georgia. Carson Beck's the starter. The talent around him is absolutely insane on the offensive side of the ball. Ladd McConkey, you add in Ra-Ra Thomas from Mississippi State, their leading receiver. This team is loaded. Brock Bowers, the best college tight end in a long time. I don't care that some of the guys might be drafted higher, but Bowers at the collegiate level is unbelievable. They've got the best offensive line in college football. The defense isn't as good as it was the last 2 years, but guys, it doesn't have to be great. Remember a couple things about their schedule. They play one team that's got a projected win total at 9 or greater, and that's Tennessee at 9 wins. Rocky Top in week number 11 of the games in their 11th game of the season. So Carson Beck's got all the time in the world to become the guy that he needs to be. They've got depth at running back. Georgia has to win 4 games to win a national title this year.
Can we find our Craig Krenzel? By the way, he did play 0-4 for the Bears and 0-5 for the Bengals. Shout out to Craig Krenzel.
I watched him beat the Giants in person. That was the last NFL game I attended as a fan.
Now, one of the three that Amal had, he had Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan. Let's talk about Michigan when we come back. Remember, after the 2020 COVID-shortened season where they went 2-4, Harbaugh was about to get fired. He was 0-5 against Ohio State, 3-3 against Michigan State. Since then, rocket ship. Will it be a championship this year?
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw. VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, the betting splits are up always. Omnipresent over at VSIN.com. Money and bets for every game, updated every 10 minutes, straight from DraftKings, today's games and future events as well. Make sure you check out, use those betting splits to your advantage during the football season, especially part of your arsenal. VSIN.com to check out the betting splits. We got you back here, Sharp Money. Week one, of course, right around the corner. Got games coming up Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. We were just talking about the decision. Okay. We were just talking about the decision. Ryan Day going to go with Kyle McCord over Devin Brown to start for Ohio State as that discussion loomed into this morning. I think the perfect person to talk about quarterback battles would be Max Brown. Remember, Max Brown couldn't find a bigger recruit, 5-star kid, number one quarterback in the 2013 class, USC, Pittsburgh quarterback as well. Tremendous player, great broadcaster now, Pac-12 network analyst, former USC quarterback. You can find Max on Twitter at MaxBrown4. And as we say hi to Max, Max, you are the perfect person to talk about this, okay? It's going to be Kyle McCord at Ohio State, but Devin Brown is going to get playing time as well. It's kind of a dangerous game, oftentimes, that coaches play where they promise something along the recruiting trail, and then the game start, you have to deliver. You want to talk about splitting time with your teammates here and the quarterback situation at Ohio State?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, fellas. And,
thank you.
makes me feel a little old. I'm, what, six years removed from playing, and I remember training with Devin Brown when he was in elementary school out here west. So crazy wow. that he's now front and center for the college football world to see. But, yeah, I mean, as from a quarterback perspective, splitting time sucks. I did that in college a couple times, and I don't care what you say as a coach. I think it leads to quarterbacks feeling like they're playing with a short leash, feeling like they need to hit every home run shot. And I think it's a fine line between a quarterback that, hey, if I know I'm only playing in the first quarter and at the end of the first quarter I get my one shot play called and I know I try to force it rather than hitting the check down. It's always a fine line right there. And it's obviously on the quarterback to play within himself. But it's a delicate balance. I would imagine a school like Ohio State didn't necessarily need to promise anything on the recruiting trail. I would imagine they're given the "we're going to play the best guy" type of speech, and I'm sure that will ultimately play itself out here in Ohio State's case, hopefully in the first half of football.
Max, you're a big-time recruit. For people that don't know, you won the Gatorade Player of the Year twice in the state of Washington. When you were being recruited by the biggest schools in the country, was there any school that came to you and said, hey, listen, we're going to give you an opportunity, whether it be as a freshman or we're eventually going to promise you potential playing time? What is it like? Take people through the process that may not be familiar with what kind of goes on the recruiting trail and then where coaches wind up in a difficult situation, currently what we're discussing at Ohio State.
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, I think most coaches probably got the vibe really early with me that I was, you know, I was pretty locked in and not a straight arrow, but I wasn't in it with for the games or some of the money or all the stuff you hear about sometimes with five-star quarterbacks. That wasn't necessarily my vibe. I knew I wanted to play in an elite program, and for me it came down to Alabama, Oklahoma, and USC. And at that case, with all three of those schools, I mean, they're not in the business of promising recruits anything, at least in my experience, because they're good enough, and especially those schools with the rich quarterback tradition that they had. In fact, it was kind of the opposite for me. When Lane Kiffin offered me at USC, he said, "Max, we're offering you and one other guy. First guy to take it, first guy to take the scholarship, he's going to be our dude." So it was kind of putting the pressure back on me rather than them feeling like they owe me something. And I guess that's the luxury of a school like USC. But I think it gets interesting when you talk about those schools that are maybe lower level D1 schools or mid tier D1 schools, when you're trying to poach the hometown kid. Like, I mean, for me, this didn't happen in my case, but I was a Seattle guy. I remember Mike Leach at Washington State. I never really gave Washington State serious consideration, but that's the type of dynamic that maybe you start promising things and you can get yourself in a unique position. And I will say nowadays, the NIL component and guys getting legitimate money, you're seeing that a little bit at ASU and UCLA. With both those young quarterbacks playing, I don't know this to be the case, but you always got to be thinking, hey, is part of the reason they're playing because some NIL booster in the background knows that, hey, I want to see my investment get on the field. I think that there's a lot of truth to that in today's college football.
Tremendous information. Inside look at the recruiting trail in college football. Max Brown joins us here on Sharp Money, Pac-12 network analyst, of course, a former quarterback, Max Brown, four. Okay, let's talk about USC. What did we learn? What can we take away from the win over San Jose State?
Yeah, to be honest, guys, I don't know that I learned a lot. I mean, I learned Zachariah Branch is a stud, but those that have been following the program closely, we kind of knew that was only a matter of time. I guess I didn't expect it to pop necessarily week one, but we knew behind the scenes he was a beast. But I say that we didn't learn a ton because I walk away with some of the same questions defensively. I think I felt the depth more at USC, but it's hard to tell if, hey, some giving up 28 points, is that a byproduct of San Jose State having a good quarterback or some of the deficiencies we saw last year from USC? And then offensively for USC, there's still a lot up in the air at some of those position groups. They started five different offensive line combos before getting into the reserves at the end of the game. I'd expect there to be a tighter rotation in the weeks ahead. And then at receiver, you had nearly like 10 guys catch a pass. And I don't think this is going to be a year for USC where there's a true receiver one. But we know Caleb's special. That's nothing new. And I think there's a world where we don't necessarily see the true USC for about a month from now because the schedule is pretty light on the front end and heavy at the end of the year facing Notre Dame, Washington, and Utah at a 3 out of 4 weeks.
You know, Max, you brought up a really good point there that the Trojan schedule doesn't get difficult until October 14th, game number 7 for USC at Notre Dame. Does this benefit them in the sense that they continue to ascend into the rankings, potentially get highest number 2 or 3 or somewhere in that range, and then with a loss, because it won't drop them so far at that point in time, they could be a potential one-loss team that gets into the playoff just based on the way the schedule plays out?
That's a good point. Hadn't thought about that in terms of timing. I think there's definitely truth to that. I go back and forth. I can make an argument for both ways, that USC's schedule is extremely advantageous, given that it's more backloaded, like you said. But I also lean, and I think nowadays, I lean more towards, I actually have a little bit more concern with the schedule. And the reason being is USC's bye comes in their week 4, the rest of the world's week 3, because USC played in week 0. That's a really early bye, and they're going to have to rattle off 9 straight games. That's a lot of college football without a break. And I also think from a psychological perspective, having it be a weak front end and then a back, I mean, like I said, you have in Washington, Utah, Notre Dame, 3 out of 4 weeks where it's very physical. I could see a world where maybe USC gets a little comfortable early on in the season and then gets punched in the mouth by Utah and Washington. Not that they're going to sneak up on USC, but it's just a different style of football that I think USC really needs to be wary of. Maybe some of the pitfalls there as we get into mid and late October of a schedule that was somewhat of a cupcake early on and then gears up quickly towards the back of the season.
Okay, Max, the Pac-12 is loaded. Time for Max Brown's power rankings. Give me the top 3 teams in the Pac-12.
Top 3 teams in the Pac-12. I got USC 1, I got Washington 2, and Utah 3. I think all those teams can make a legitimate case for why they should be the favorite to win the conference. I think USC's depth is the difference maker for me. I think this is the deepest the roster's been really since the Pete Carroll days. And as we get late into the season, that makes me optimistic, along with the fact they have the Heisman Trophy winner. But I just got off Salt Lake City radio, and it's a Utah roster that returns a ton of production. But Cam Rising's health's a big question. And then Washington, interested to see where their secondary's at. That, to me, was their Achilles heel a year ago. If that group's at least solid, I think that defense could be a lot better to support a Michael Penix-led offense.
You answered, actually, my next question about the Huskies' defense, but just talk to us real quick about Penix. How good can he be? Can he get to New York City as a Heisman guy?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think I put him, my quarterback tiers out west, or Caleb Williams at tier 1 by himself, and then Michael Penix at tier 2 by himself, ahead of Bo Nix, ahead of Cam Rising, ahead of guys like Shedeur Sanders and DJ Uiagalelei and Cam Ward, of course. He's that good. Extremely productive last year, nation's leading passer. Very interested to see from a confidence perspective. See, last year he was named the starter in mid-August. He had to go through a quote-unquote quarterback battle. I think we all thought he was going to be the guy, but it wasn't necessarily clear. Now he's had a whole offseason of being the dude. This is his team, a year of being healthy. How does that work for his confidence? Can he unlock another level to his game, especially with his legs? That's what I'm intrigued to see. I think he could find himself with another productive year being right in the thick of a first-round NFL quarterback type of conversation.
Just what we needed. That was tremendous. Max Brown, Pac-12 Network analyst. Great job, Max. We'll talk to you during the season. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys. Talk soon.
Thank you.
Tremendous. Wow. At Max Brown 4. Got a big future. Michigan, you're next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, NFL season right around the corner. Nonstop football action is in sight. You can get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Life's more fun When you're in on the action, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Before kickoff, use the code SHARP to get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5 on any NFL. Bet only on DraftKings Sportsbook using the code SHARP. The crown is yours. Bonus bet expires 7 days after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. Make sure you check it out. $5 turns into 200 over at DraftKings. I'm Al Shaw. I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, Dustin Sweetelson. We're back here. Sharp Money got plenty to do. Max Brown was great talking college football and the quarterback situation at Ohio State. Of course, the Pac-12. We've got Kyle Hunter coming up in 15 minutes. A college football handicapper does a great job. Kevin Noon, BuckeyeHuddle.com, to talk about Day's decision to go with McCord over Brown as the starter, though Brown will see some time. And then Burke, a double shift for Adam Burke. We saw him with the week one preview show right before Sharp Money aired. He will join us in the final hour at Berkey Tuesdays as we got you back. So Amal mentioned three teams he thinks can win a championship, and that is Georgia, Ohio State, and Michigan. What's fascinating about Michigan, boys, is nobody saw this coming. The expectations when Harbaugh got there were through the roof. By the time the COVID shortened season ended, the expectations, as Michael Jordan would say, the floor is the ceiling, or whatever that means. You understand, there were no expectations because they go 2-4 COVID. Harbaugh is about to get fired. He takes a reduced salary, incentive laden. After 2020, he's 0-5 against Ohio State, which is a dagger. Amal, you know this. He's 3-3 against little brother in Michigan State. Just a freaking disaster for Michigan. Then what happens? All of a sudden, he tore his staff apart. He got the incentive laden contract, reduced salary, and then 2021, his team in Michigan comes in unranked. Next thing you know, Big Ten champs. They beat Ohio State for the first time. They're 12-2. They lose to Georgia in the college football playoff. Everything's good. They finished the season number 3 overall in the country. That's 2021 after Harbaugh's about to get fired. 2022 rolls around, 12-0, 45-23 beatdown of Ohio State at Ohio State. They beat Purdue in the Big Ten championship game, win another Big Ten title. They lost to TCU 51-45 in the national semis. Okay, here's the deal. This year's team, they're number 2. They've got the dynamic trio of J.J. McCarthy, whatever you think of them, Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum, star power, depth, experience. The non-conference again is simple. Yes, Harbaugh suspended for the first 3. Doesn't matter. They're not playing anybody. And they're all at home. As a matter of fact, the first four games of Michigan's schedule at home. It's a cakewalk. This is the year. Before I let you launch into why you like Michigan, the bottom line when it comes to Harbaugh, 21-22 have been great, but he's 1-6 in bowls. He's 0-2 in the college football semis. On the national stage, the facts are Jim Harbaugh struggles. Amal Shaw.
Great point about the bowl record. I didn't realize Harbaugh's 1-6. I was just looking right now, just the Citrus Bowl win his first year. By the way, first of all, if I'm Harbaugh based on the schedule, why not just take a vacation down to Turks and Caicos? Once the season ramps up, you're not going to be able to do anything. I mean, they could literally, we can pull somebody out of the stands in Ann Arbor and they can win these first 4 games. They just need to show up. You look at this team, they are loaded. The talent on this team is incredible. You know, Patrick, people will look at J.J. McCarthy, former 5-star recruit at quarterback, dual threat. I'm not as high on him as other people are. McCarthy, to me, is not even in their top 3 offensive players. I would go Blake Corum. Loveland Colston at tight end is going to be an absolute dude. He's only a sophomore. This guy's going to be a superstar. And then, of course, Donovan Edwards behind him. They've got talent everywhere. On the defensive side of the ball, Will Johnson's going to be a superstar as well, if he's not already. The schedule works out extremely well. They're at Minnesota and at Nebraska, then at Minnesota. They have the game at Penn State. And then, of course, they have Ohio State at home. They've got to win the game against the Buckeyes. And I'll tell you what, if both teams come in at 11-0, Patrick, I think one of those teams can suffer a loss and still make the college football playoff. But the reason why I believe, despite giving up 9 guys to the NFL draft last year for Michigan, this team is the second favorite, in my opinion, to win the national title. They've got the experience. They've got the talent across the board. They've got just the ability defensively. And then one thing you and Dustin like to make fun of me for, which is accurate, though, is they've got the schedule. The schedule works out extremely well. They have done well against Penn State, even though they got to go to State College and they play the Nittany Lions and the Buckeyes twice in 3 weeks. This is a great opportunity. The best chance, in my opinion, since 97 for Michigan to win a national title.
I think it's an easier schedule than Georgia.
No, I know because they have Penn State and Ohio State. Georgia doesn't even have anybody comparable like this. Penn State would beat Georgia, beat Tennessee by 10 points.
That's fair. That's fair. Georgia's schedule is a cakewalk. But the bigger picture when it comes to Michigan, and I want to, you know, kind of bring some context to what we're talking about here. This is a program you hear of because the maize and blue, the unis are freaking sweet. Dustin Sweetelson growing up outside of New York, he just loved that block M. He loved the maize. He loved the blue. And he bought into all the hype. I bought into it. I grew up in a state where you sat on one side of the lunchroom because you were wearing maize and blue, and then you sat on the other side of the lunchroom because you're wearing green and white, and then you battled like Grease and John Travolta in the middle of it. Nah, I'm just playing.
Was Sandy there?
Oh, Sandy.
I owned Michigan Nikes. I owned like Charles Woodson style Nikes.
Did.
They were maize and blue, and I think I'll find them and send them to you. They were maybe the sweetest shoes I've ever owned.
Big guy out here thinking he's Tim Biancapattuca. Here's the point about Michigan.
I was more of a Tyrone Wheatley guy, if we're being honest.
They never won anything with Bo Schembechler. Those are facts. They won one national championship in 97, I think since 48, and that was a split national championship. The consistency of Bo in winning games was there. The big stage was never his expertise, and that brings me to Harbaugh. Harbaugh's a disaster on a big stage. You mentioned the first bowl win. I think it was against South Carolina. Remember, it's the most famous hit in the history of college football, as far as I'm concerned. It's Jadeveon Clowney jumping in the backfield and absolutely blowing up a human being to the point where his helmet went straight up in the air. How is that even possible? It's the most athletically ridiculous thing we've ever seen on a football field. That dude was Jadeveon Clowney. Don't sleep. However, bottom line, 1-6 for Harbaugh and Bulls. Dude just struggles in a big spot. Constantly cratered when he had better talent against Michigan State. I mentioned the 0-5 start against Ohio State. That's talent v. talent. Comes down to coaching. Now, the last 2 years have been a bit of a reversal, which is great. But then I mentioned, got beat by Georgia 2 years ago. Okay, Dustin Sweetelson, that's fine. Georgia on his way dynastically, potentially. How about getting beat by TCU? Can't happen.
Nope.
I don't care how magical that carpet ride was last year for Texas Christian University. You're freaking Michigan. You don't get beat 51-45. And frankly, you don't give up 51 points if you're Michigan. So, Dustin, you want to say something, but that is my point. Before you put Michigan in that threesome, and I think a lot of my friends listening will appreciate what Amal Shaw did because he's biased, but he took his bias away and he said Michigan deserves to be in the threesome. Jim Harbaugh is so freaking overrated. Give me his brother, John.
His stubbornness, I believe, what will do in his tenure at Michigan and why they will never get over the hump. You see, the stubbornness to continue to run what they call a pro-style offense, which is not a pro-style offense anymore because the professionals all have some version of the spread elements mixed in, which just puts your quarterback in more advantageous positions to make plays through the air. The pro-style offense makes it harder in big moments to make throws when they matter. So J.J. McCarthy, who I feel like I've been really hard on this show, but I'm less hard on him and more hard on the system he plays in because I think because of this system where it's difficult and the sets that they're going to run, more of a run-based offense, there are going to be one or two moments where he's going to have to make throws to beat an opponent. And I believe this system is going to hold him back from being put in the proper position to make easier throws. You'll see other quarterbacks who run spread offenses have easy outs, have good number two and three options. This system doesn't have that. And that is my biggest issue with this team. It could come at Penn State. It could come when they host Ohio State. It could even come if somehow Michigan State steps up for one random game against their biggest rival and wants to mess things up for them. We've seen it happen with Auburn and Alabama when Auburn stinks and they mess things up for Alabama. I think Jim Harbaugh's stubbornness to not adopt more spread principles to run this pro-style offense will have it where J.J. McCarthy needs to make a throw to win a game, and it will be too hard to do it, and it's too much pressure on a quarterback, and that will be the issue for Michigan this year. And Penn State is the one where I'm highlighting where I think it happens.
Amal, you want to close it out?
Yeah, I can't really argue that much. I mean, a little bit more of a spread situation nowadays than necessarily a pro set, but still, I agree with what he said. Remember, J.J. McCarthy threw not one, but two pick sixes in the game against TCU. It's going to come down to quarterback play. Can they deliver when they need it most against Penn State, November 11th and November 25th in Ann Arbor?
There it is. Going to be fascinating. Penn State, Ohio State, both on the sked towards the end of the year at Penn State, at Maryland, host Ohio State. Kyle Hunter breaks down college football. He's next.